This is a section we're going to be covering Android resources and intents. The first thing I wanted to show was to cover the example from that Dan gave in class. He was having some trouble with it. I was able to get it to work, so I just wanted to show that to people to give you a version with sound. And that was it. The big thing is obviously that he had things set up so that the button will turn on and off the sound instantly. All right, and now just a quick second while I to pause while I reset my examples, and then we'll be able to move forward. Hello again. So this is this section on Android resources and intents. Quick overview. As we just saw in class, or in that you will see in the lecture, depending on which part of the time continuum you're in, you're going to see a little bit more. Dan went over the breakdown of what's in which section of the resource directories and what you can do with them. What we're going to be going over in section tonight is a quick little app that, over the course of several iterations, we give a little bit more flexibility and use more examples from resources and intents to show what you can do. It's a simple two activity app, and we'll go over it right now. So the first one is intent one. There are, I think it's really embiggen this a bit. Oops. Yeah. Okay. I guess on the screen I can't do some of the things I'm used to. The two activities are the main activity and the title activity. So the and as Dan said, the main activity, as we saw, has got a standard view group with a number of items in the XML. I try to make all my XML files a little bit more human readable, so I always try to have standardization in terms of width, height, then any specifics. Always start with an ID. I think that, as Dan said, in resource files, you always want to use lowercase letters, numbers, and underbars. I find that's useful for IDs too, so you don't get out of the habit of doing it the correct way for files, for drawable files or sound files or whatever you want in your resources. In the first iteration, everything is hand coded. You know, your colors, your text values, whatnot. The only excitement is in the, excuse me, please. It's everything is laid out pretty much as we've seen in class today and last week. Nothing too strenuous. All the excitement actually happens in the code. And we'll pull those up. All right, so is this big enough to see? Okay. So we define the class UI elements are edit text, our button, and did you have a question or were you just stretching? Oh, just okay. Sorry. Our text elements are edit text box and our button. In on create, we connect to the edit text in the button, and we set up a on click listener. Nothing too strenuous. I try to put comments clearly in my code so people can see where I make mistakes. Oh, I'm sorry, or where I called two mistakes. In this case, we've got a toast that will never show up on the screen. And does anybody remember from lecture why that's the case? The toast won't show up because we never show it. Sorry, I guess it would be easier if this was the screen size that I was used to at home. So we've got a toast that we create, but never do the dot show. Here we see an example of an intent to pass information to jump from one activity to another. And as we run this, yes, it'll blow up shortly, and you'll see why. All right, where is my, there it is. All right, so I have my intent. I hit the display button, and everything, you know, blows up as expected. The reason for that is if you're going to use an intent to bounce from one activity to another, you have to update things in your manifest file. It's Android manifest, and let's begin that. I personally find the GUI version of editing the manifest file almost incomprehensible, and prefer the old-fashioned XML file so I can see everything all at once. But that probably says more about how I like to code than anything else. But in the manifest file, each of the activities that you've defined are laid out nicely. In this case, we've got the main what I've defined as my main activity. It has an intent two intent filters to set it up as the main activity, and this is what will come up on launched. And any of your Hello World apps or any of the examples that Dan has given us in class all do this to better use an intent. And we'll go to intent two. We've got to edit this file. So let me just close everything and jump to the next. And all you have to do is just add the second activity. You can either define things fully with a... fully qualified path, or just keep it the way it was with just the activity name, and it'll use the fully qualified path from the package name. For my example, it's because I've created lots and lots of different packages for each of the examples in here. This works best for me, but if you've got some third-party code that you've linked to in your programs, you might need to use the fully qualified path. And so let's just run this, and we'll see what we have. Take a look at the code change for main activity. Nothing. The only changes we've made to the activity is we've added the show so that the toast will show up when you press the button, and that's it. Everything else is we've corrected the manifest file. So let's run this. So we've got the toast that says the button was pressed, but nothing is actually passed along to the second activity. Notice that I hit the device back button, and that will finish the activity that's currently running and go back. In the example that Dan gave in class with the dialogue, that does the activity finish. I think that was the second to last of the activities where he had the dialogues. He programmatically finished the activity. This is pretty much hard coded in unless you've redefined what the back button will do for all Android applications. So let's jazz this up a little bit and work a little bit more with intents. We're going to pass information from one activity to the other. And what we do here is, let me try to change this so we can all see it. We've got the intent that we had last time, which creates an intent that will take the current context, in this case main activity, and jump to the new activity, which is going to be the class that we're going to be jumping to once the start activity is called. But what we've done is we've added a second step of we've created a bundle, we've added the bundle to and put the string, which is the title activity title ID. This is an ID, so when it's unpacking the bundle, it knows what to look for. There are helper functions for putting a string, putting an int, putting a float, yada yada yada, for bundles. We're pulling the information that we're getting out of the text box. And one of the things that I tend to do as a coding standard is I always make sure that the IDs are tied to the activities that's going to be doing the unbundling. And we'll show you how to do that in a second. You create your public static variable. Well, I guess it doesn't have to. It does have to be static because you don't have an instance of the Java class in the previous activity. So that we can get and then this title ID is used in the unpacking. So the unpacking is very straightforward. We get the bundle, which onCreate always has. We grab the intent, get any extras. If the extras is not null. We check to see if we've got our ID, and then we parse it. For example, if we used something, let me first show you what it looks like working, and then we'll break it a bit. So we've passed that from bundle to activity to activity, and now we'll show what happens when we break it by having the title activity look for an ID that's not there. And what we got was a string that what we got was the string with an ID that wasn't present in the bundle. And the default for the default return is a null in the case of an empty string. And an edit and when you put up in a text view a null value, it defaults to putting up an empty string. So the sending an intent in an intent is really straightforward. All it is you know packing the bundle, and then on the other side just pulling the values out. This is going to be intents are going to be very useful in the staff project, because obviously you've got when you pick a photo ID and then send it to the next activity to parcel it out in tiles, you're obviously going to need to use intents to communicate between activities, and you know the interactivity communication is pretty much the main There's two ways to do it. You can either do it with intents, which is what the Android people recommend, or the other option is singletons, which are Java classes, which pretty much hold information between and are stored in memory for your activity between them. Intents are a little bit more, I guess singletons are a little bit more flexible. Intents work nicely for message passing, so you don't have to have everything in memory all at one time. And the next thing we're going to be doing to our little sample project is adding a little bit more functionality to our class. Okay. So I was bothered by the fact that I could send a message with nothing in it, so I put in a little error checking to catch that. So I put in a text change listener. Oops. And the only one I care about is after text is changed. And we'll show you what that does in a second. But as you can, you know, as you can see here, if there's no text, disable the button. If there is text, let the button send something. So it's pretty straightforward. And we're going to see that in actuality. So obviously we can't press the button button without anything when we have the button. Oh, sorry, I did do one other change. I locked the orientation of the title to landscape, mostly because I wanted to give you an example of orientation changes within your app. And let's go take a look at how I did that. So there's no changes in the code. This is the same as we saw before. All orientation lock is done in two places. One is the title. It wasn't done in the, sorry, it's been a little while since I played with this code. It wasn't actually done in the layout file, it was all done in the Android manifest, which should have come up when I clicked it. Alas, it didn't. There we go. And let's move that over so people can see it. All I did was add the following to the activity definition within the Android manifest file. One is we've locked the orientation to landscape, and the second is to keep the keyboard hidden. Not that the keyboard really would have shown up without an edit text box or anything like that that would have brought up the keyboard, but this is belt and suspenders, you know, making sure that that we've double checked everything. Because typically, and we'll show you in the example, the previous activity on rotation will change. You know, that's the default Android behavior, is that rotation doesn't matter. And in case people haven't figured out how to do that or looked on Stack Overflow, to rotate the emulator, it's just Control F12. On your device, and the next thing we're going to be doing is starting to configure our activity by playing with the resources. So let's take a look at main activity, because that's really the only one that's going to change for the most part for the rest of our examples. Is the first thing I do is I start using the string variables, going with as I said the naming convention of all lowercase with underbars as separators rather than the standard camel case of variables that we use in the code. And this is all in the values the strings file. Nice, simple, nothing to really write home about. And in each case, button text or default values, as well as the app name, it's all here. The big thing is you can't use an ampersand, much in the same way with HTML. You've got all XML files. You have to you can't use an ampersand directly. You've got to. There's other ways to do it. Thank you. And as we continue on, we see more and more changes to the layout file. In this case, we start using the color values. Much as Dan illustrated in class earlier tonight. It's only on the third iteration of changing resources that things start to get interesting, because we've added some new files, the drawables. Hey, let me begin this, which I'm going to go over now. One of the things that Android gives you that I think is one of the really powerful ways to do it is they have the ability to programmatically draw things in XML files, so you don't need specific images. So and we're going to go over that right now. The nice thing with this is I just worked on a Android project for work, and we had to deal with low, medium, high density devices, as well as tablets. And by defining various things programmatically in the XML files, this saved our design people from having to do, you know, several different iterations of all the different types of images we were going to use. We're going to go over how to do that right now. So the first thing to look at is my colors. I defined a whole bunch of different colors by name or by a variable name that calls back to something that was previously defined. The main reason for this is just to is for clarity and to tie things a little bit more tightly to usage. For example, anything with colors or styles, if you've got multiple activities, you're going to want everything to be, you know, standardized across your app. Otherwise, your marketing people are going to scream at you. So let's see how to do some to do this. So we've got a two interesting sets of files. One is a gradient file. So a gradient file uses the shape designation for creating a what it does is creates a visual element through XML. So we've defined our generic shape. The big thing here is our gradient. There's two ways you can do a gradient. You can either have a start and an end, or you can have a start, middle, and end to show what your gradients are going to look like. I went with my minty background to white, and I have it going from top to bottom. By changing the angle, you can have it to go left and right. You know, standard drawing protocol. But let me show you the two examples of what it looks like with a gradient. So we open up our layout file and. All right, you can barely see it here, and unfortunately, I think the fact that I picked a minty green, which is probably not going to be enough contrast for the camera, so give me a quick second to pull that up in the app, and we'll see if the bigger image is more contrast, or we'll do it a different way. There we go. So here you can see that we've got from bright red, and we've got it gradients down, you know, standard gradient using. And if we were to add a mid value, which we'll do now. We can see that it goes to dark and then from black to white for the second half. This really gives you a lot of control for, you know, what you can define for any gradient that you want as a background or a background button or what have you. And. Let's take a look at the other really powerful thing that Android gives you is a selector. This what this does is you can choose different shapes or what have you depending on the state. I use this with the buttons so that depending on whether the button is disabled or pressed or whatnot, you'll see different functionality. And we'll take a look at that in the example. The important thing to remember is, as I noted here, is the first one that comes back positive is the one that it'll pick. And I'll show you why that's important in a second by screwing this up after we show it working. There we go. Oof. Okay, so as you can see, the disabled button has a gradient, a gray gradient on it. And when we give it some text, we can see that there's a there's some it behaves differently, and you can see that it gives you the illusion of animation with the gradient and the reverse gradient on the button press. And this is all done through the selector. If it's disabled, it does the gradient one way. If it's pressed, it does the gradient a different way. And and the default, it does the gradient a third way, giving you one button that that is configurable in with very little no actual code. It's all defined in the XML. The example the one I want what I wanted to show you about the using the state that's on top being caught before the others. Let me illustrate by backing these up. So let me move the unpressed state to the top. So the only difference between the disabled state and the enabled state is whether enabled is true or not. There, so by just moving that up to the top, what we're going to get is, in all cases, whether it's disabled or not, it all looks it all looks the same. We're getting no change whether it's pressed or not, because the first one it found was that it was. Was that it was not selected, and and as such everything defaulted to the first option in the selector. We can do a little bit more, because as you see here, the text color. There's something else that you can do. Is you can selectors are very powerful, and you can use them in a number of cases. What we're going to do is we're going to use a selector for the actual text, and that is in the last example. Let me close all these. Added a little bit more in the code, which I'll open up first in a second. So we have something called the color directory, and this defines our form button text color, and we'll take a look at that now. What that does is similar to the selector that we saw for the button gradient. It changes the color depending on whether the state is enabled or disabled, and this gives you. Oops, sorry. We've got when the button is disabled, we've got white text, and when the button is not disabled, we've got black text, and then the other thing that we're doing in this version is we're playing with styles, and I'm going to go over those now. One of the very powerful things that the other powerful thing that Android gives you is the ability to define styles for your code, much the same way that we saw with the HTML5 style sheet, the CSS files. So I can define dimensions, for my various font sizes. I can define styles, so if I want that all my page elements are going to have certain padding around them. These can all be defined as styles, and this pulls the actual style information out of the particular layout files into one place. So if you want to change anything in your application across a number of activities, this is the way to do it. Especially, for example, if you're doing a work-related Android app that's got 30 different activities and has to have style standards for the company. This is the way to do it. And there's two really interesting things that the styles can give you. You can have a parent, so it gets things from the standard Android definition, or you can have and this can be done in two ways: either explicitly saying what the parent is, or having the having a period at the end of a previously defined style. So, for example, we've got header title, which comes from the Android large text appearance, or we've got header title huge, which defaults to header title as the parent. And if we had said parent header title, it would do the exact same thing. And anytime that you inherit, it takes all the things that the previous one did and only changes the things that you've given it. So text color, padding, gravity, single line, all of those things from the previous style are all in this one. It's only changing the text size. I've used the dimension, which uses which is pretty much the equivalent of a good coding practices of variables, so that you're only changing things in one place. So, for example, if the designers want your style to have two sets of they want your style to be homogeneous across your application, this is the way to do it. So it's like all of our font sizes are going to be this size. The other important things that we've got here is SP and DP. These are used regardless of whether you've got high, medium, or low density devices, the relative layout across the screen will stay equivalent. This is slightly different than using actual pixels or points, because the big problem with that is a high density screen, pixels and points are going to be bigger or smaller. This gives you a little bit more control about how things are laid out on the screen, and that's extremely important, especially when you've got to support multiple different devices. And then your layout files just use the new styles rather than have everything coded within it. And we can see that in the sample. So our text view uses, you say style whatever. In this case, clearly it's going to be showing that it is that, this is italicized as well as centered on the screen and a certain height. We've defined specifically our buttons. And one thing that's kind of useful with buttons is because I included a whether it's selected or not in the custom background. And we'll look at that now. Where is it? Unpressed. And whether it's selected, this gives you one file that handles five different styles of button. And we can show how that's used now. So in the standard example, we've got, you know, the standard button. We've got our disabled button. And, you know, if it's selected, you can have a, it's got a different U for the, a different color rather, for the selected button or the non-selected button. And a button is selected. Unfortunately, this is the one thing that you can't do in the XML file. This has to be defined in the code itself. And we can see that. It's nice and simple. All you have to do is set, you know, the select this whether it's selected or not. And you know, this is, you know, especially useful if you want to define for your style that all positive button choices, you know, have a slightly different look than non-positive buttons. Like in the dialogue example that we had for the alerts dialogue. Android, I think, defines positive buttons on the left and negative buttons on the right. Or I could have that backwards. The documentation is going to be clearer than I am. But I've always found that, you know, having slightly different colors or font changes also draws your eye to the draws your user's eye to the one that you want them to select. And that's pretty much, in a nutshell, what you can do with, you know, with resources. There's more that Dan went over in class, and we'll go over a little bit more next week in terms of sound files and images. Everything that I did was all done programmatically. The one thing that I can certainly show you, and I think that's it's going to be illustrative, it will illustrate something, is by changing the density. So this is what things look like on a high density screen. When we change it to a, where is this, pixel density? You know, it still keeps its, you know, it still keeps its or, you know, it the layouts and, you know, the font sizes stay within the realm of what we're what we had defined, because I use the you know, the SP for text sizes and DP for design elements. If I remember correctly, it's dots in, you know, in pixel in pixel density or something is to, you know, and the main reason for that is if we had hard coded the, you know, the font size in points and pixels, things would get all foobarred up as you switch from different densities in your devices or your emulation. And that's it. Don't forget that tomorrow is going to be the walkthrough for the first Android Staff Choice project, the end puzzle that that Dan briefly went over in class tonight. And there's a lot. As you saw in the first walkthrough, it gives you a lot of information for how to do the project. Thank you, and we'll see you next week.